ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the NTRA pre-Belmont Stakes call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, participants are asked to press star 1 to register for a question. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Mr. Jim Gluckson. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Michelle, and good day, everyone, and welcome to the National Thoroughbred Racing Association preview media teleconference for the 140th running of the Belmont Stakes for Saturday, June 11. With us today will be Keith DeSormo, trainer of Preakness Stakes winner and likely Belmont Stakes favorite, Exaggerator, will be joining us in a little bit. Dale Romans, who has two Belmont Stakes starters in Brody's Cause and Cherry Wine. And later on, Donnie K. Von Hemel, who is the trainer of fourth place Kentucky Derby finisher Sudden Breaking News. I wanted just to make mention of the fact that today I'm substituting for Jim Mulvihill, who's still on paternity leave with his son Francis, his newborn son, and he's doing quite well. So Jim will be in this place later on this year. I just want to take a few housekeeping details before we get to our questions and our guests. This Belmont Stakes is first run in 1867, is the oldest of the three Triple Crown races, and the Belmont Stakes is a part of the wonderful three-day festival here at Belmont Park. Belmont Stakes Day with 10 stakes races worth $8 million. The draw for the Belmont will be next Wednesday in New York City. As far as everything else is concerned, NBC Sports will be televising, of course, the Belmont Stakes with a two-hour telecast on Saturday, June 11th, and will be preceded on Friday with coverage at 4 p.m. from Belmont Park, racing on Friday and on Saturday on NBCSN beginning at 2:30 p.m. I think right now we can go right into our beginning here and bring in our first guest right now. If we could, we'd like to speak with Dale Romans, who, of course, has Cherry Wine and Brody's Cause in for this Belmont Stakes. And I think if we're ready to bring in Dale, we can start right now. Please, Dale, good afternoon. Jim Gluckson here in New York.
Hey, good afternoon. I'm in New York also.
All right, man. How are you?
Good.
I wanted to make mention of something interesting that you talked about to one of the publications earlier this week about getting a horse prepared mentally for the Belmont as much as physically. And I think you were speaking specifically about Brody's Cause. Can you talk about that? It's an interesting aspect that about teaching horses, and I think you invoked the name of Alan Jerkins in saying this.
Yeah, well, Alan talked to me about it. One of my first Belmont horses that, you know, to go that far, they're not out there that long, usually in a race. And you just want to get them mentally ready to go a mile and a half and run for that length of period of time, which is unusual for them. So I just like to keep them on the racetrack a lot in the morning when they're training. You don't have to do as that much with them. Don't overdo it, but just keep them out there where they know they're used to be on the racetrack for the amount of time it takes to run the mile and a half.
All right. Well, just to make mention of his schedule, what have you mapped out the next few days for Brody's Cause?
Well, I trained him pretty hard after the Derby and worked a mile Saturday. Worked very well. He shipped up to Belmont in good shape. He just jogged today. And so right now we'll just train to kind of normal work Saturday. And go from take it easy from there.
All right. Well, let me just jump over to Cherry Wine for a second. You were very pleased with his performance in the Preakness. And how does the race set up for him? Another closer for here in the Belmont. Can you talk about his development?
Well, I'm not sure. You know, we'll have to look at it, study. I rolled the dice in the Preakness just to make hoping that the speed would materialize that showed up on paper. And it did. We took him, we ate back, and that was the plan from the jump to make one run. But this race doesn't look like it has that kind of speed. And a mile and a half race is, you know, you need to be closer than a lot of people think it would be a deep closer race because they want to go further. But it seems, you know, Woody Stevens used to say it was a speed horse race to go a mile and a half. You need to be out there on the pace because they're all tired at the end. So we may be laying a little bit closer.
All right. Well, Dale, we have some media on the line that would like to ask you a few questions. So if we're just hanging there for a second, we'll get rolling with the media questions.
Yep.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you have signaled for a question prior to hearing these instructions on today's call, please repeat the process now by pressing star 1 again to ensure our equipment has captured your signal. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone the opportunity to signal for questions. Our first question comes from Danny Brewer, horseracingscoop.com. Please go ahead.
Hey, Dale, how's it going, man?
Good, Danny. How are you doing?
Outstanding. Let's talk about Kerry Wine here in just a second and his improvement. Fourth in the Rebel, third in the Bluegrass, second in the Preakness. So what does that mean is next, Dale?
Well, if you figure the pattern, it makes him a winner, doesn't it? But he's just
that's
improved.
That's what I'm thinking. I mean, if you're Tennessee guys, we don't know much, but still, one-digit match,
yeah.
Kind of like, yeah. So what kind
you
of improvement
pitched me that, you pitched me a softball there, and I appreciate it. He's just getting better and better as he gets older, and his father was the same way. He didn't break his maiden until February of his 3-year-old year, and he went on to get better and better as he ran because he got older. And this horse is doing the same thing. He's just finally mentally putting it all together. So I was real pleased with his race in the Preakness, and I think he's set and ready to go run a big race in the Belmont. I think his pedigree is probably set as much as anybody's to go a mile and a half.
Okay, let's talk about Acorn Go Maggie Go. She's pretty doggone good too now, isn't she, Dale?
She's probably as good a filly as I've ever trained right now. I'd say she's done some special things, and you know, running back, winning a grade two off of 3 weeks rest and one start, and coming back quickly off the Oaks and winning the Black Eyed Susan. She's done some special stuff, and this is going to be a tougher race, but she's as good as I've ever had.
Dale, appreciate your time. Wish you the best of luck. Look forward to seeing you soon.
Thanks, Dan. It's always good to talk to you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Ron Flatter of RSN Australia. Please go ahead.
Hey, Dale. It doesn't look like there's a lot of obvious pace in this race. How do you see the race setting up without that?
Well, I haven't handicapped it that hard until after the form comes out. We see the post position. But you're right, there's not that much pace. It doesn't look like. And so I think both of my horses may be laying a little bit closer, or quite a bit closer. I know Cherry Wine will be laying a lot closer. We're not going to go 28 lengths out of it, try to make it up going a mile and a half on this track without pace. So he'll be laying a lot closer. And I think he can do that. I don't think that he's a horse that has to be way back like that. That was a strategy that we thought gave him his best chance in the Preakness, and it worked pretty well for him. But if we want to, we can be a lot closer.
Looking at Brody's Cause, do you just draw a line through the Derby?
I don't think the Derby was that bad. I mean, you know, if you're on seventh in the Derby and don't get beat all that far, it's not a bad race. It's just, you know, it's a tough race to win. That's why it's so valuable and why it's so important and so prestigious. It wasn't that bad a race. I just think, I mean, he could improve. And the mile and a half should help him. He should get better with that. So I thought he would win. You know, I actually thought he could win the Derby. I would win the Derby. First time I've ever been able to feel like that. But I didn't leave there that disappointed in him. I thought he put in a good effort. He didn't have the best of trips, but that's the case. If you're not much the best, then you better have the best trip because you're going to get into trouble if you're not much the best or up close to the pace. He came running, he finished strong, and, you know, it is what it is. He'll run big.
And finally, Corey and Luis will get the rides?
Yes. Very glad to have them both back on the horses. They both know them. They both, you know, neither one of them ever done anything wrong with either horse. And glad to have them back.
Very good. Thanks, Dale.
Yep.
Thank you. The next question comes from Tim Wilkin of the Albany Times Union. Please go ahead.
Hey, Dale. First of all, how you feeling?
Not that good, to tell you the truth, but the further I get away from the wreck, the more things they find that have gone wrong. So that But I'll be better. Everything will heal. They tell me 3 or 4 more weeks, I should be fine.
A lot of medication?
Yeah, quite a bit. More than I thought I would have to take, or more than I've ever taken before. But, you know, I had the Preakness, I started swelling up a lot. They found out I had a bruised heart, and so I had to take quite a bit of stuff. It's got me a little knocked out. But I'll be all right.
And if I could just ask you your thoughts on Exaggerator, deserving favorite in this race?
Yes, very talented horse. You know, we beat him twice last year as a 2-year-old, but he's a better horse right now. I thought he looked really well going into the Preakness, and I thought that, you know, Keith's done a great job with him. I thought he looked as good as a horse could look going into the Preakness.
But do you think he's towers over the rest of this field right now?
No, because nobody's going to tower over the field because the mile and a half is the question. It's something no one's done yet, and he should do it with his pedigree. But I don't think he towers over the field. I think that he's the well-deserving favorite, but he's going to have to, you know, run. He's going to have to run his race on a fast track if it's fast, like he has on the off tracks, and prove that he can do it on both, which I believe he can. He's just a talented horse, but there's always a hand this race to him. He's going to have to run to win it. Yeah, I think he's going to say the same thing. I think, you know, there are very few horses ever tower over a field in a classic. So last year was the year that maybe they did, but it's very few that do.
Great, Dale. Thank you. See you next week.
All right. See you then.
Thank you. The next question comes from Jenny Reese of Oakland Anywhere. Please go ahead.
Yes, Dale, could you discuss your record in the Belmont, and have you ever had so many thirds in such a big race?
I don't think it's much bigger I've had 2/3 in the Derby and 4 out of 7 starts in the Belmont. That's pretty, you know, I had a teacher tell me once in high school I was lost at sea because I was just, everything I did was average. And I guess thirds are averages in Belmonts, but they're in classics. So I'd like to step up and break that mold here pretty soon.
And with Cherry Wayne, what gives you confidence that he can be as effective on, I mean, I know he's won on, what, off the turf, I guess it was, on a fast track, but against this kind of company on a fast surface versus a wet surface?
His race at Gulfstream was on a fast track. He ran big in that one. It was a, you know, that was a big race. I think he can run on anything. You know, it's surprising.
Yeah,
I thought he would be a turf horse, but he's turned out to be a dirt horse.
Yeah, but against this kind of company.
Well,
I mean, just what is it you see in his action, or is there anything that you, you know, because, again, we talked about this before. You said going to the Preakness, the wet track would move him up, and you've changed your mind on that.
No, the wet track I thought would move him up, and I think it would if it rained again, maybe. But I don't know. I just knew he would run good on a wet track. There's a little bit of an unknown there if it was the slop, just like with the favorite. But, you know, the way he's trained, he's a very efficient mover. His father ran well on the dirt. He ran third in the Derby on a fast racetrack, so maybe he could do the same thing. But I think he really trains good on it, works good on it. And, you know, he's just a solid, nice horse. There's a lot of unknowns going into the Belmont every year. He'll go the distance and the surface issues. And you know, I had the same surface issues with Bellahan and a couple others, but this horse acts like he'll do anything I want to do. I think he'll lay closer, he'll go from behind, he'll do whatever we ask. I think the big thing is his pedigree, he should get the mile and a half. You know, he's one of them that should.
Sort of in that context, talk about, you know, you were third with the maiden in the Belmont. And like the Derby, it seems like you have to be an exceptional horse to win. The Preakness tends to be very formal. The Belmont, a whole lot of horses eligible for one other than have won in, you know, the last 10-15 years. So what is it about the Belmont? Are horses just rung out, or is it strictly the mile and a half, or whether they can handle Belmont?
I think it's strictly the mile and a half, and I think that there would be, there are horses that aren't as accomplished. I wonder, but they would be if they'd had more mile and a half races to run in or after the Belmont. But they're just, it seems to be the only one, like Noah's Cat. That's the only reason I ran him, is I knew that he would like the mile and a half as a maiden. And that was my first start, I think, in the Belmont. And he ran a good third.
Mm-hmm.
It was big for Randy, he owned the stallion, he owned the mare, and he was a nice horse. And I knew, you know, where else can you run a mile and a half with a horse you know wants to go that far?
Yeah. Okay, great. Thanks, Jim.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. The next question comes from Frank Angus of Blood Horse. Please go ahead.
Hey, Dale. How are you?
Good. All right. How are you?
Pretty good. Hey, with Brody's Cause coming in off 5-week rest and Cherry Wine with the 3 weeks, are you comfortable with that amount of time between races for each horse? Is this kind of that timing work for each horse?
Yeah, that'll work well. I mean, the difference with Cherry Wine is he had the rest before the Preakness.
Yeah.
And so he came into it fresh. So the turnaround in 3 weeks isn't going to be as big a deal as a horse, you know, that had to run hard and then run a Derby and then run Preakness and then run Belmont. And for Brody, he's, he ran in the, he ran Tampa, he ran Bluegrass and got right back into the Derby. So he probably, the 5 weeks should do him some good.
Yeah. Thanks, Dale.
So I think both of them will be set up just fine.
Great.
Thank you. The next question comes from Tom Judge of South Florida Sun Sentinel. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Dale. You've talked a little about pedigree. A couple of weeks ago on one of these calls, and I'm paraphrasing, Bob Baffert said that he didn't think horses these days, few if any, are bred to run a mile and a quarter, which would go even more for a mile and a half. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm not going to argue with anything he says. He's a genius of this game, but he's probably right. They aren't bred. There's not as many out there that are bred to go the distance. But, you know, if they're going to go, every horse will go. It's just how fast they'll do it. But I think my horse is bred to do the distance. He goes back to El Prado. And at El Prado, he would run a mile and a half of no problem. And I think that we're one of the few that are. And, you know, I look through the sales. I try to find horses that will be mile and a quarter type horses and end up with fine grass pedigrees most of the time. Because Bob's probably right. There aren't that many bred to go as far as they used to. Races as they used to be.
You say you look for horses that'll go that far. What is it you look for in a horse that leads you to think that maybe this one will go the classic distances?
Well, just the pedigree, just how their family has all run and how far the family's gone. But, you know, the dosage used to be a constant. Now I don't think it's even talked about anymore. And that was for horses that would run far. But, you know, they're still running pretty fast times.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from John Preachy of HorseRaceInsider.com. Please go ahead.
Hey, Dale, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, buddy?
Everything is okay. I wanted to ask you, you referenced that race from Florida, from Gulfstream Park. And in that race, man, he just made talking about Cherry Wine, he made a tremendous run around the turn. He showed a turn of foot unlike many of the horses that we've seen on the Classics Trail this year. Given the pace scenario, is there a chance you say he can go that far? So maybe what about a middle move for him and try to break the race open before the closers can get started?
So he might be even closer he might be closer to the get-go before the closers get going. And that might be something we try to do, is put a little more speed into him, get him closer. But, yeah, that's definitely a strategy. But I'll just wait and see what it looks like once the form comes out and we can look at it. Do you need a ticket this year by any chance?
No, I'm down here in Florida nursing my wounds here. One more thing. Who do you project? I was looking at the Derby, the Belmont form. It appears that maybe, you know, if you go back to the Preakness, Stradivari was pretty ranked. And, obviously Johnny tried to kind of calm him down while also keeping the pressure on the horses who were keeping the pressure on the favorite at that time going into the backside. Do you see him as the potential pace setter? I mean, who would you guess would be?
He would definitely be the pace setter, I would think. You know, I thought he would be. I thought Johnny did a good job to get him to settle off the lead in the Preakness. I think he will be the pace, and then the rest of us will see where we fall. You know, how we fall out of there and how fast he's going. If he gets a mile and a half, it's a question.
Yeah,
he's obviously a very talented horse.
Well, in any event, a safe trip for both of your horses and a safe trip for you once you leave the track.
Thank you. Yeah, that, believe me, I'll have my seatbelt on. Everybody else has theirs too. It saved me.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, bud.
Thank you. The next question comes from Richard Rosenblatt of Associated Press. Please go ahead.
Hi, Dale.
Hey.
Listen, just a quick question. Not many of us have been through a triple crown like last year, and so now we're a year later and we're going into the Belmont, and I don't know, it for you obviously it's you're dealing with your horses in this race, but what do you think Belmont Day might be like? I mean, after last year and maybe even the year before with Chrome and a triple on the line.
Well, the triple on the line and someone winning the triple crown is special because it's hard to do. If it happened very often, it wouldn't be special. There wouldn't be all the hype to go along with it. So we've got to have these years where we don't have the triple crown on the line, but we still have a great race. We have a great card. Ira's done a special job of putting the card together. This whole 3 days is a mini Breeders' Cup. And it's if the race fan is going to have a lot to look forward to. And a new race fan should come out and watch because you'll see an emerging star come out of Belmont.
Thanks very much. Feel better.
I think it's going to be, thank you. I think it's going to be a great day, a great weekend to race.
All right. Thanks, Dale.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Art Wilson, Southern California News Group. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Dale, regarding Exaggerator, you mentioned that he's a talented colt no matter what kind of track you guys race over. But you can also say that, his two most visually impressive races were the Santa Anita Derby and the Preakness, which were both run over muddy, wet surfaces. Do you think if you get a dry track into Belmont, do you think that the chances of Brody's Cause and Cherry Wine beating Exaggerator increase?
Well, you could also say that those were his last two races where he was matured, and the Derby was a damn good race. I thought it was a good race, but I think he's getting better with age, and as his pedigree would say, he should. But we beat him on a sloppy track with Brody before in the maturity, so he likes a slop too. So I don't know if it'll make that big a difference for me, and both my horses like the slop.
Okay,
I think Exaggerator's just improved. I think he's gotten better as he's gotten older, as Colonel would seem to do. And I think because he, besides putting those races together, he just looked so good in the barn every day watching him train. He looked good on the track training. He's just gotten to be better, I think.
Okay, and other than your two colts, Exaggerator and Nyquist, what's your thoughts on the rest of the three-year-old crop so far this year?
I think it's a solid group of three-year-olds. He ran fast in the Derby. The Preakness was unusually fast early pace, and I think it's a good group of three-year-olds. I really do. I think that they'll go on and be some good older horses and good stallions come out of this crop.
Okay, thanks. Great. Good luck in the Belmont.
Thank you.
Thank you. If there are no further questions, please continue.
Well, thank you, Dale. Much appreciated for your time here today and discussing your horses. And best of luck to you in the Belmont coming up in 10 days. Thanks so much for joining us, Dale.
Thank you. Anytime. Talk to you later. Bye.
Okay. All right. let's move on now. Michelle, who do we have lined up for us next, please?
Keith is online. Please go ahead.
Great. Let's move right on then to Keith DeSormo. Keith has the Preakness winner exaggerator, prime for the Belmont Stakes. Keith, this is Jim Gluckson in New York. Welcome to today's call.
Jim Gluckson. Glad to
be
here. How about if I ask a little bit of an embarrassing question to you?
Okay.
I'm new to this NTRA teleconference deal. I haven't heard it before. I haven't listened to it. Tell me a little bit about it so that maybe I can know who I'm talking to.
All right. Well, I'm moderating the call here today on behalf of the NTRA in the public relations capacity. And we have media on the line that will be asking you some questions in a few minutes. I'm going to ask you just a few questions about exaggerator, and then we're going to turn over to the operator, and the operator is going to ask questions, is going to open the call for media to ask questions to you over the next 10 to 12 minutes. So it's very, very simple.
All right, so
process.
It's not an audience. It's not an audience. I'm speaking to media.
Yes, if there are media on the line, Keith, they're listening to us right now, and they're individually going to ask you questions. So I'm going to ask
right,
you a couple,
cool.
and
right.
then we're going to turn it over. So I just wanted to just begin by talking to you about where Exaggerator's adjustment here in New York at Belmont and his schedule over the next few days leading into the race itself.
All reports are good. And again, I'm reading the same thing that you guys are writing about. The trip was uneventful. Of course, I have personal contact with the assistant, Julie Clark. He arrived in good shape, training fairly lightly since the Preakness. We picked it up a little on Tuesday. He'll do another two-minute clip on Saturday and come back with a breeze on Tuesday. And the philosophy is a little different than between the Derby and the Preakness. In that two-week interim, I was more concerned with recovery and getting him to settle after the race, settle and recover. That's why I spent a week at Kentucky before going to Baltimore. I thought it was wise to do that before putting him in another new environment. Anyway, the philosophy in those 2 weeks was maintenance and recovery. Whereas after these couple of weeks at Belmont, maybe a little more intense training leading up to the Belmont Stakes, being that it's a mile and a half and on a consensus different surface, a deep sandy surface. So I wanted to put a little bit more work in them. Not extensive, but a bit more than the last race.
I just wanted to back up for a second. I know you wanted to obviously move on. You're looking forward to the Belmont, but just your reaction to winning a Triple Crown race with your brother aboard, the winner, and family and friends all chiming in over the last week or so. What's that been like for you?
Oh, it's been fun. It's a culmination of a lifetime of work. Knowing with as much confidence as I could muster up that it was possible without the deep-pocketed owners that you see basically ruling the sport at that level. I just saw time and again the horses that make it to that level aren't always the blue bloods, and I had to figure out a way to do it myself. And like I said, this is a culmination of a lifetime of applying myself to horsemanship and finding value and to not only get there, but to win one in my first evolution in the Triple Crown series is pretty gratifying.
Outstanding. Congratulations again. Keith, I'd like you just to hang in here for a second. We're now going to turn it over and have the media ask you some individual questions. So, Michelle, let's get ready for that section now, please.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question, please press star one at this time. The first question comes from Danny Brewer of HorseRacingScoop.com. Please go ahead.
Keith, how's it going, man?
Hey, Daddy, you must have been waiting on the button like on the, what is that game show? Family Feud.
Yeah,
Danny Brewer, first in line.
Yes, if I ain't on the DeSormo family, I guess I'm on the other family. So, talk about the versatility of Exaggerator. Do you think sometimes people underestimate his versatility? Because, I mean, he comes from far back sometimes, but he can run out front too, wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah, but I've never read any articles where someone is saying that he's not versatile. I mean, it's plain as day. If you say that Exaggerator is not versatile, then you're not reading the form. He broke his maiden going 5/8. He won the Sanford at 6.5, the Saratoga Special, 6.5. And now he's accomplished at 1 3/16. I mean, if you say he's versatile, then you're not doing your homework. Not versatile.
Right, yeah, because he's very versatile. Like I said, he's won in many different fashions. Now, as far as, you know, the whole endeavor here with the Derby, you said I need a Derby win, Kentucky Derby Preakness. Do you pinch yourself sometimes and think you're going to wake up or wonder if this is all a dream? I mean, because this has been fantastic, right?
No, because, like I said, it's not something that I woke up every day only dreaming about. I always thought it could be reality. Not only because I had confidence in my work, but it is reality. My brother's there almost every year. I've had close friends and coworkers that have participated in these events. So even though I wasn't in it, it was tangible to me. It was realistic. So it's not dreamlike. It's more gratification.
Right. So it's rewarding for all of your efforts that you've put in over the years and the
rewarding.
Time and
yes.
Stuff. Okay.
Right.
Very good. Well, you certainly deserve it. I appreciate your time, Keith, and I sure do wish you the best of luck.
All right, Danny. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. The next question comes from Ron Flatter of RSN Australia. Please go ahead.
Keith, let me follow up on Danny's thing about the versatility of the horse. I mean, when we look at the lack of pace that seems to be in this race, does this bother you at all?
Well, they said there was a lack of pace in the Kentucky Derby, and he ended up 15 lengths off the pace. So it does not concern me, and that is in direct relation to the question about his versatility. It doesn't concern me because he can be on the lead if we need him to be. Of course, we don't want that, but I've always told Kent, and Kent realizes, We're on the same page. It doesn't matter if we're 2 off the lead or 20 off the lead, as long as the Exaggerator is comfortable. If he's comfortable for the first half, 3/4 of the race, then it doesn't matter if it's a slow pace or not. He's got a tremendous kick, and that tremendous kick can only be realized by his comfort level in the first part of the race. So it's not about length off the pace. It's about comfort level of your horse, and that's only something the jockey can determine.
And when you bought him at the yearling sale at Keeneland, what did you see in him? Was it just how he looked? Was it the bloodlines, the total package? What specifically did you see that attracted you to him?
I saw everything. I look at pedigree means nothing to me until I see the individual. And I spotted him in the back ring and immediately was attracted to him. Very correct in his confirmation up front and behind. A very good walker, cat-like walk with a good coverage of ground and efficiency. His balance is so important. The balance of the placement of his neck and angle of his shoulder, length of his back and through his hind end, balance is so important in efficiency. And intelligent eye, he had it all physically. And then you go to pedigree. Of course, he's by a sire that I always loved and couldn't wait to get my hands on one, Curlin. And it so happened that at that time, Curlin was pretty cold. Curlin was respected, but he wasn't a go-to sire at that time. The only horse he had sired was Palace Malice in the on that level. So I think the verdict was not out on Curlin yet in the general public. But as far as I was concerned, I loved him. It was the same scenario as Texas Red. People were off of Fleet Alex, and I just couldn't get my – I couldn't wait to get my hands on him at the right price. Same applied to Curlin. He wasn't the hot sire at the time, and I think that's totally the only reason I could get my hands on Exaggerator, because as an individual, he was outstanding.
And finally, are you still looking at a Tuesday work for him at Belmont?
Yes, Tuesday work.
Okay. Thanks, Keith.
You're welcome.
Thank you. The next question comes from Art Wilson, Southern California News Group. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Keith, your colt is already proven. Doesn't matter what kind of track he's going to fire. He's been good on all kinds of tracks. Arguably, his two most visually impressive races were the Santa Anita Derby and the Preakness when he ran over the off tracks. How much do you think the off tracks had to do with his performances? Or Dale Romans told us earlier he thinks your horse is just maturing and getting better. Well, what's your thought on all that?
Well, I think Dale is right on. And because Dale didn't have a horse in the Santa Anita Derby, it's kind of hard for him to compare the Preakness in that race, but I think Dale would agree with me. When you look at the pace of the Preakness and the Santa Anita Derby, it was so hot up front, it contributed to the fact that the leaders and the second flight, for that matter, are going to collapse. And when you have the only horse sitting back there reserved, being reserved and just waiting to explode, then it's going to make it look more exceptional. So I contribute the way he looked in those two off-track races to an incredibly fast pace than to the fact that the slop or the mud moved him up. So I guess another way to put it is that if they go an exceptionally fast pace on a dry track and we're sitting back there comfortable, then the result is going to be the same. He's going to just explode by them. So, yeah, you're right. His performances are as good on the main track as compared to the mud. It just so happens that those two really off-track races, the pace was extremely fast.
Okay. Good luck, Keith.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Tim Wilkin, the Albany Times Union. Please go ahead.
Hey, Keith. The last 2 years, the Belmont, the California Chrome going for the crown. You had Farrell last year winning the crown. Obviously, after you guys won the Preakness, that eliminated the Triple Crown dreams for anybody, for Nyquist. And a lot of people were then going to get excited about the fact that the rematch between Nyquist and Exaggerator. Now that that's gone, do you think people are going to be jazzed up to watch the Belmont Stakes?
You know, did you say it's Tim?
Yeah.
Your name, Tim? Yeah, I think, Tim, you would be able to answer that better than me, because I would think that you have a better pulse about the racing public in New York compared to what I do. But in my estimation, yeah, that's the only bad thing, and I'm a big fan, too, obviously, of racing. That's the only bad thing about beating the Derby winner in the Preakness. You lose a lot of the mainstream media, and maybe the casual fans that might turn on the TV to watch a potential Triple Crown event winner. So, yes, I think we've lost a few fans, but I don't know. I'm so close to the situation. It sure seems like Exaggerator has jazzed up some people. Maybe they like the name. They like his running style. They like the distance of his wins. Maybe they like this brother-brother thing. I don't know. hopefully we can get some fans that are not everyday fans to come in and watch us compete. Hopefully we can provide them with a good show.
You talked about Exaggerator's recovery time being pretty quick. Did he recover pretty quick out of the Preakness?
Yes, and that Pimlico barn area and the quiet, what am I trying to say? That place cleared out and was as quiet as a church after the Preakness. You know, that steak barn area is, there's only two or three barns there, and the remainder of that stable area has been made into a parking lot. So I know that stuff is boring, but it just cleared out. It was quiet. Pimlico has a great surface, and the staff there looked over us, and it was just a great place to spend a week after his big effort. And yes, I think he recovered as well after the Preakness as he did after the Derby.
Thanks, Keith.
You're welcome.
Thank you. The next question comes from Frank Angus of Blood Horse. Please go ahead.
Hey, Keith, how are you?
Hey there.
Hey, I thought it was interesting what you were saying about the Stallions, Curlin, and the Fleet Alex. Do you think sometimes people downgrade or give up a little bit too soon on these young Stallions?
Yeah, that's obvious. It's all about what – they give up on trainers too real quick. It's all about what you what have you done for me lately. And if a Stallion isn't hot on the track – then people will move elsewhere. You know, there's always another hot young prospect coming in. The nature of the game is to give young sires a chance. Everybody tries to get in on the first crop while the breeding fee is low and the prices are maybe low to get that next superstar. A case in point is Uncle Mo. Now, you think if you tried to go to the sale and buy an Uncle Mo now, you'd have to be a sheik to be able to afford it, whereas Uncle Mo's first crop were relatively attainable. So that's the reason why people jump on these young sires bandwagon before they're proven. And I think a Fleet Alex and Curlin were at that breaking point. They were losing public support. And then, you know, obviously the Texas Reds and the Exaggerators and the Stellar Winds came into play.
And then on Exaggerator, when I look at that horse, I just see steady improvement from start to start. It's really quite amazing. Have you ever had a horse like that, and can you put your finger on what quality has allowed him to do that?
You know, Texas Red did that. If you look back on his form, each start was an amazing graduation of readable or tangible numbers increased every race. But I could explain that with Texas Red because physically he was that way. You just knew every start would be getting better because his body was – he had this huge, rangy body that you knew would get better with time. Exaggerator is kind of a precocious, younger horse, and he's built different. He's more refined. Tighter line. So Exaggerator has been fast from the get-go is what I'm saying. I think the reason, the only explanation I can give you for his ascension is, one, pedigree, and two, as he, you know, he's by Curlin out of a vindication mare. That means distance with or they get better with age and distance.
Yeah.
And two, this racing experience. After all these starts, he finally realizes exactly what we're asking him to do. We're not asking him to blow away from there from the gates and run as fast as he can. We want him to settle and finish. And that's very hard to do. horses have very volatile minds, and it's our job as trainers to try to keep those in check.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Keith.
Yep.
Thank you. The next question comes from Marcus Hirsch of Daily Racing Form. Please go ahead.
Hi, Keith. How are you?
What's up, Marcus?
I'd love to chat with you, but you've long since answered any questions that I had to ask. So just wish you best of luck. Thanks.
All right. Cool, man.
Thank you. The next question comes from Richard Rosenblatt, Associated Press. Please go ahead.
Hi, Keith. After the
Hello.
Preakness. Hi, Keith.
Hey there. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Okay. I got
you. All right. After the Preakness, you said it may take a couple of days or a little while for some brotherly love to sink in. So I'm wondering where we stand there a week before the Belmont. And secondly, with Kent having ridden so often in the Belmont on that racetrack, will you have maybe more of an extended conversation with him than you did for the previous races?
All right. Let me see here. The brotherly love question. Brotherly love sinking in. I don't remember that, but I guess to answer your question is we have a relationship that, you know, you can't. How do you describe the depth of the affinity we have for each other? Growing up together as brothers and now being in business together, it's hard to describe, but it's there. This is like icing on the cake. This is gravy. This is not something that needs to get any stronger. It's pretty cool. It's very, again, I use the word gratifying. As far as the racetrack, do I need to speak to him more? No, he's ridden there. He rode several years in New York. He's won a Belmont. Of course, he's had his issues with a couple of other ones, but the pressure's not on us. We're not. We don't have a Triple Crown candidate. The pressure is only on us to bring our horse up there in the best shape we can and get a nice smooth trip. But this is more about having fun, you know, appreciating that the fact that we're competing on the highest level and enjoying every moment of it.
All right, thanks very much. I appreciate it, and
yes,
we'll see you in New York.
Okay.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. Please continue.
Keith, this is Jim again. I thank you so much for joining us today, and you're terrific on your first call here. And we so are very pleased that you've joined us, and best of luck to you and the family and Exaggerator in the Belmont Stakes.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Have a great day.
You
Keep too. Keep us on, everyone. All right. Now we'd like to move on to our third guest. He is Donnie Van Hemel, the trainer of Sudden Breaking News. And we'd like to bring in Donnie here and to speak with him. Donnie, this is Jim Gluckson in New York. How are you today?
I'm very good, Jim. How are you doing today?
Great, thank you. I wanted to just get into a couple of questions for you before we turn it over to the media. With Sudden Breaking News, his pedigree with AP Indy and Fleet Alex and all of this distance, the capabilities that he have, I would imagine that you're really looking forward to this Belmont Stakes.
Yes, very much so. We're looking forward to it. I think I've commented previously that we don't have many mile-and-a-half races on the dirt, and this may be the only one for three-year-olds that fits that bill, and that's something we think our horse can do. So we're very much looking forward to coming up and giving it a good try.
Well, with so many closers in the race, what are your concerns or strategically about keeping in contact with the field for this particular race?
Yeah, I think it's pace becomes more and more important the further you go, and there's more, always more of a chance the further you go that pace is going to be soft. And I think in an instant like that, that our horse will be fairly close. If the half mile is in 50 seconds, we probably won't be more than a few lengths back. If it's faster than that, then we'll probably be a little further back. But it, we all know it's not going to be like the Derby. It's not going to be 45 and change. So to think that this race is probably going to be 49 or 50 the first half mile, and we're going to be somewhere in striking distance at that point, I would think.
All right. Diane, your shipping plans to Belmont?
Yes, we have a flight up on Tuesday the 7th.
All right. Very good. Very good. At this time, we have some media on the line that would like to ask you some questions. So let's just turn it back over to Michelle here, and we'll get that process going for you. Hold on one second.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. If you do have a question, please press star 1 at this time. Our first question comes from Marcus Hirsch, Daily Racing Forum. Please go ahead.
Hi, Johnny. How are you?
Good, Marcus. How are you doing today?
I'm pretty well. Thank you very much. I wanted to ask you about your horse and turns. And I think it's been widely speculated, but I don't know if I've ever heard you talk about it, that maybe he doesn't get around the bend as well as he gets down the straightaway, which I guess is true for most horses to some extent. But it just looked kind of in the Derby a little bit like he maybe lost some momentum, swung around the far turn, and then really picked it up once he swung back into the straightaway. And if there's any truth to that, do you think that having such a gentle sweeping bend in this race is going to be beneficial to your horse?
Well, I think I didn't feel it that much in the Derbies. I did a couple of races in Arkansas where maybe it wasn't as good around the turns. And that is a thought that's crossed my mind in Belmont being a mile-and-a-half racetrack and how wide the turns are, that could be one of the things that's going to be a benefit for us, yes.
Great. One more thing. If it is a slow pace and it's a different kind of race for him, I mean, he does seem very effective making one big run from farther behind. Do you have concern about a horse like that, you know, changing up his style and having to run a different sort of race?
Well, I don't know if it's changing his style and that he will be running the same sort of fractions he's run in his previous races, because if it's 49 or 50, that's probably somewhere along the lines of what we were running earlier in some of the earlier races this year, and where they were fast paces. And I think there'll probably be some horses in front of him no matter what the pace is, but the fact that we would be a couple lengths, 2, 3, 4, 5 lengths behind as opposed to 15 or 20 lengths behind, I don't think will be a factor. I think if you look at some of his races as a younger horse, we did have a horse that was placed closer. Now, we did have a lot of success being a D closer this spring when the pace was really rapid. And I think even in some of the races where it wasn't 45, but it was 47 and change on a track that was a little more tiring or taxing to the front runners, that was probably to our benefit. But it's a mile and a half race. It's just one of those things where I think the pace and the ability of the riders to sense that pace and know that is a very important factor, yes.
All right, Donnie, thanks so much. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question, please press star 1 at this time. The next question comes from Ron Flatter, RSN Australia. Please go ahead.
Donnie, what was the thought process going into the jockey change?
Well, I think the biggest factor was experience on the Belmont racetrack at a mile and a half and experience in the Belmont itself. And I think it's a unique race on a unique racetrack as far as American racing is concerned. And the chance to have Mike Smith ride. And Mike's been a leading rider in Belmont before. He's won the Belmont before, and just trying to make sure we have the best chance for our horse to show what he can do.
And at the risk of either being indelicate or overthinking things, what do you find now that you know that this horse is a Ridgeling rather than a gelding? What does that tell you about any past performances and just what happened to get you to that point? Again, I understand you have to be delicate about this.
I'm not sure I understand the question as far as he has two undescended testicles and then I'd been told he was gelded, so it was when he came time to be tattooed, he was tattooed as a gelding, and it really was a mild-mannered, kind of a narrow-made, looks kind of like a gelding horse, so it was never a question, and once we did ultrasound and found out he was actually what they call a bilateral crypt orchid, that was news to us, certainly, and I don't think it's really changed anything about what I thought of him before or since, and just something that's a change in his gender or lack of being a gelding, I guess, is not the only change I can see.
Right. No, that's exactly what I was asking. Okay. Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question, please press *1 at this time. The next question comes from Tim Wilkins, the Albany Times Union. Please go ahead.
Hey, Donnie, you ran against Exaggerator, obviously, in the Kentucky Derby, and I'm sure you watched the Preakness. What are your impressions of him, and do you think he is, without question, horse that has to be beat in the Belmont?
Yeah, I think he's a very high-quality horse. I think he's shown that many times on the racetrack, and with the mile and a half, I think with his pedigree, I think he's very much something he can do also. I think I do believe he's the horse to beat in the race. I think he'd be the favorite and the deserving favorite, and just have to look at it and hope there's a place here and there where we can gain an advantage where we didn't run in the Preakness and pointed more for the Belmont. Hopefully that will be an advantage for us. But I do think Exaggerator is the horse to beat, and I think, you know, to be quite honest, he's the most likely winner of the race with what he's done up to this point.
How much do you think the time in between helps you? Time off.
Yeah, I think it's good for us. Yeah, I think it's good for us. The mile 3/16 wasn't going to be the kind of race I felt like that we would have a chance to beat Nyquist and Exaggerator. And the fact that the Arkansas Derby was 3 weeks leading up to the Kentucky Derby and then the comeback in 2 weeks and 3 weeks, we just thought it was our best interest and our horse's best interest and his best chance to win one of these grade one triple crown races was going to be in the Belmont. And I thought he showed he was the right kind of horse in the Derby. He belonged and deserved a chance to win one of these races.
All right. Very good. Thanks, Donnie.
Thank you. The next question comes from Tom Chicha of South Florida Sun Sentinel. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Donnie, you're the second trainer this morning, this afternoon. Dale Roman's also mentioned it's unfortunate that they don't write more mile and a half races. But if you talk to racing secretaries, they'll say we don't write them because they don't fill. And the Breeders' Cup tried to bring long-distance racing with the marathon, and ultimately they had to discontinue it for lack of support. Do you think if they wrote more races that they would be more distance races at a mile and a half, that they would be supported, or it's just the breed now is not suitable to that kind of a distance?
Yeah, it's what came first. I've just seen throughout racing is just more and more sprint races. We've gone in the last 15, 20 years to the, for example, the 5-H turf race being a little bit of a novelty item at the end of a meet to a mainstay in American racing. And I don't like it myself. And, you know, there's from time to time, I have horses that run well in those races, but I still think to separate distance to me separates good thoroughbreds, and the further you go, the more that begins to tell. Where at 5/8, there's not a lot of difference between a good horse and a not as good horse. Whereas when you go on a quarter and up, I think it really starts to show who are the quality animals now. I can't argue the racing secretary's point. It's a hard race to fill, especially on the dirt. And they have a point, no doubt. But I would welcome more distance racing myself, but it doesn't appear to be the trend in American racing.
I just thought of this as you were talking. Do you suppose that if the tracks got together and each of them agreed to write a race like that with a decent purse, that might spur more interest in distance racing?
Well, that's a possibility, but I think the point you made in your question there is that the tracks would all have to get together because they're competing for horses, and if you won't write the race at this track, someone will at another track, and then that's where the horse is going to go run. So they all have to decide. It would have to be together, and they would all have to decide, well, these are the kind of races we're going to ride. And so people are going to have to run where they're at. They're not going to be able to go somewhere else and run in a shorter race type of thing. So it would take a lot of coordination between the tracks, yes.
Yeah, what I meant was that, you know, as it is now, the Belmont is probably the only time these horses will ever be asked to run a mile and a half on dirt because the there aren't any. I think they have one for older horses, Belmont Weekend. But if you knew that there was a 3-year-old race at a mile and a half at Arlington, and there was another one maybe a month later at Laurel, and another one a month later at Saratoga, do you think that would spur an interest in longer races?
I think it'd be worth a try, but it would be a tough thing because I'm afraid. If it wasn't just immediately successful, it didn't draw big fields immediately, then it would drop too quick. And I think it would take some time if you're going to try something like that. You would have to have a 5 or 10 year commitment so as the breeders and the owners and everybody would be looking to try and develop or purchase those type of horses to run.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
You bet.
Thank you. The next question comes from David Grenning, Daily Racing Forum. Please go ahead.
Hi, Donnie. I was just curious your reasoning for staying in Kentucky as late as possible as opposed to getting a workout or some training at Belmont. And also, when will he have his last breeze at Churchill?
Yeah, we're looking probably Sunday, Monday, somewhere in there. We're going to do some light work. Probably a half mile or something like that is what I'm thinking right now. And my horse has been very good as far as adapting wherever he's been. Derby day, the crowd, and all the hoopla surrounding the Derby, He was a champ the whole time, never turned a hair. And I think that's part of the reason that he just adapts and falls into things so well that we just thought being up there the 5 days would probably be enough. And he's been comfortable and trained well here at Churchill. And you know, I've seen the last few years, I've seen some horses, some other horses that have done the same as far as their training at Churchill and then going up to Belmont and run and be successful at it.
Okay. And where will he call home this summer?
We'll return to Churchill. We'll be here through the summer. Really don't have any specific plans past the Belmont, but we'll see how things go there and try and come up with a good plan for the rest of the summer.
Very well. Thank you for your time.
You bet.
Thank you. The next question comes from John Preachy, HorseRaceInsider.com. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, Donnie. I wanted to follow up on Tom Chick's question, the part that relates to breeding. Do you think that in terms of those long-distance races that we don't have enough of long-distance pedigrees wherever these sires stand? I think it was Dale who was saying that, you know, if you're looking for a horse with a distance pedigree, these days you mostly wind up with turf horses. Could you expound on that a little bit?
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. I think the mostly turf pedigrees, because that's where we still run some of those mile and a quarter, mile and a half races, pretty much across the country. If you want to run long, you better be able to run on the turf. And a lot of those pedigrees have some more European influence in them also. Because it is something they do over there more often. And we have seen more of the miler pedigrees, I guess, in American dirt racing. That is probably true. I would agree with most of that, yes.
Given that you spoke of, you know, European influence, being a distance influence, well, that was an American influence that they came over and purchased back in the 70s and 80s, and now it's coming back to haunt. Do you think that the breeding industry itself should do something to improve the quality of the sport, since, you know, it said that, you know, when we get separation in long-distance races, that's how you can tell the good horses from the stale horses,
mm-hmm.
as it were. So what about that?
Yeah, I would... I think through history, especially in the last 100 years or so, I think we've seen the breeding industry go back and forth between Europe and America as far as one trying to improve their side of the Atlantic with the other side's bloodlines, and I think that's probably good as far as diversity in the gene pool and all those things. If I had any input in the matter, I would try to promote more distance racing, more distance breeding, and I think there's probably to me even a better chance for soundness and longevity careers with horses that run further. Also.
Well, thank you very much, sir, and have a safe trip on Saturday.
No, thank you.
Thank you. There are no further questions. Let's turn the conference back to Mr. Gluckson.
Thank you again, Michelle. Donnie, thanks so much for joining us today and taking your time out of your schedule to answer some questions here from the media. And best of luck to you in the Belmont Stakes with sudden breaking news. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me. We're looking forward to a trip to the Big Apple.
Outstanding. Thank you, Donnie Van Hemel, everyone. Thank you very much, everyone, for joining us today. And thanks again to our guests, Keith DeSormo and Dale Romans, and of course Donnie Ranhiwa, who just finished with us. There's a transcript available within 24 hours of today's conference call, and we look forward to seeing everyone out here at the Belmont Stakes. And a special thanks to our producer, Joan Lawrence, for putting this all together and getting our guests today. Thanks very much, and have a great day.
Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude the conference call for today. You may now disconnect your line and have a great day.